Welcome to Conscious Convos. This podcast is a space for conversations that inspire us towards better understanding and achieving spiritual growth. We do that by inviting different guests from all over the world to share their unique journeys, insights, and practical advice on how to live a more elevated and conscious life. Hello everyone, and welcome to Conscious Convos, episode 17. On this episode of the podcast, we had the pleasure of hosting Maria Leonard. Maria is a Dubai-based spiritual growth coach. I met Maria a couple months ago after having found her Instagram profile, where I read that she does something called life scripting, which got me very curious because I had not heard of this concept before. After that, I found out that Maria is the originator of life scripting, and it's a healing and manifestation modality that is very effective. And I had my own experience with life scripting. We talk about that on the episode. And we also talk about Maria's own journey and how she got into spiritual growth and how she got into helping people. We also touch on the Akashic Records for the first time on this podcast, if I believe so. So without making the intro too long, please enjoy episode number 17 with Maria Leonard. Okay, here we are. So hello everyone, and welcome again to another episode of Conscious Convos. This is episode number 17 with Maria Leonard. Maria, hi again, and thank you again being here today.
Thanks, Mohammed. Thank you for having me.
You are most welcome. So Maria, we were just talking a minute ago that we met at the Illuminations Center here in Dubai, in JLT. For those that don't know, Illuminations is a center in JLT where that offers different healing modalities and therapy, meditation workshops, breathing, etc. And I came across your profile on Instagram first. That's how I got to know about you. And I read the words life scripting. And when I read that, I thought, okay, this is the first time I hear about a concept called life scripting, and I became intrigued once I read that, and I wanted to find out more. So I'd really love to get into that on the episode today. But before getting into life scripting, Maria, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did your journey begin? How did you get into this whole world of spirituality? Is it something you've been curious about since you were a kid, or something happened in your life that made you want to explore this part of life more? So
yeah, I think you're quite intuitive that you picked it up already. I've always been curious about it since I was a child. And I think I do owe it partly to my parents, because they were also very open about spiritual well-being, understanding the mysteries of life. So I would say the first time that I read something spiritual was at the age of 7, when I read a book called Health in Your Hands. And it was an acupressure book, but it was discussing about how the chakras exist and how energy works and how the meridian works. And I was practicing acupressure when I was just 7. And then I was intrigued to understand people more, because for me, the physical reality looked quite boring and limited. And I always used to sit and ask my father, like, I'm an only child, so I always got a lot of attention from my parents, always asking him, like, why does this person speak this way? Why do you think this is happening? And, you know, those curious questions that a child can ask, but a little bit beyond physical explanation. So I got into astrology at the age of 11. Linda Goodman, who is a famous astrologist, I read her Sun Signs book. And what I was amazed by that at the time was one astrology or one sign, she was able to define it in different ways. Like, she was able to define it from a woman's perspective, a man's perspective, a boss's perspective, an employee, a child. So you have this range of characteristics going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that was like the earliest phases. And then school took over, you know, crushes, always thinking about what this crush thinks about me. And I started seeing psychics even when I was a kid. My parents were into psychics, palm reading, astrologers, right. Sorry. And it just continued from there. Obviously, I didn't go into this career early on. It was always like a side thing. So I pursued the career of teaching. I've always loved teaching. I did my English literature, my bachelor degree in English literature. And I continued on teaching adults English as a second language. And simultaneously, I started going into self-reading, psychological books, and spiritual books.
Right.
Fast forward, I would say 2012 was when I dived really deep into different techniques, going from Reiki, pranic healing, quantum touch, into rebirthing breathwork, sacred activations, and hypnosis, learning all about all of these things and being able to connect them together. And I was always pushed to do this as a career as well, but I loved teaching and I wasn't ready to give that up until I would say the challenges was when both my parents passed away back in 2016 and 2017. So that deep grief was a powerful, I would say, more spiritual awakening, because the only way for me to get out of that grief was me to do a lot of self-work. So 3 years I stopped teaching. I would just barely do a few. I would barely see any people. I was highly suicidal multiple times because life didn't feel normal. And I was actually very angry at God because I was like, hey, I've learned all of these things. I should be able to heal and help. And why are you taking the most two important people of my life away?
Right.
Just like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then, I just took this leap of faith forward, and I was already giving sessions from 2012, but I wasn't defining myself as a spiritual coach or a healer or whatever we want to call it. And then I would say 2019, it just skyrocketed, and I just started doing it 90% of my time, 10% of teaching, and it just teaching started to go away. And life scripting also blossomed naturally in 2019.
Okay. So, and you were doing that here in Dubai when you first started?
Yes. I've lived in 8 different countries, many of them in the Middle East. But I would say in Dubai and Beirut were the places where I was doing most of my healing work, because I was living in Beirut before I moved to Dubai. Dubai has been a great opportunity for me because I can see how we're diverse, yet we're the same at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Basically, to the answer to my question in the beginning is that if it was a childhood thing or did something happen in your life, and it's actually both.
It's
something
both.
You've had in you since you were a child. You're always curious about, let's say, the unseen realm, and you were already going, you know, basically following that path, but then the passing of your parents kind of accelerated your journey and made you leave teaching. So okay, probably you felt that okay, teaching is not my life purpose, and you dedicated yourself to more the teaching about spirituality. It's very fascinating because it for myself and also a lot of the people that I've spoken to, the same situation often presents itself in a sense of curiosity as a child. I mean, in my case, I'm actually and computer science educated, and I studied some engineering as well. But throughout my life, it started as an interest in psychology at first, but also in dreams. So kind of the little bit of the unseen. And I think when the movie The Secret came out in 2006, even though, okay, today the if you know The Secret as a movie, it's not it's it's pretty basic, or let's say it's kind of shallow. I don't know if that's the right word to use, but at the time in 2006, to hear about the idea that thoughts create reality was a new thing to me at the time in 2006. And that was, I think, the part or the phase of my life where I thought, maybe there is something to this. And it took me down this path, since the last 15, 16 years, reading whatever I can read and learning whatever I can learn, until, well, here we are today. So it's interesting, and I love hearing about people's journeys, and this is always the first question I like to ask on the podcast, and it's always fascinating. So you mentioned life scripting, and that is where I want to go to next. So what exactly is life scripting?
So I would say life scripting is, first of all, a healing modality. So it's a technique that you can use to self-heal and heal others. And it's also a manifestation tool, learning how to manifest consciously. And I want to emphasize on the word consciously because we're always manifesting anyway. We're always creating, like you said, our thoughts create our reality. And what makes life scripting interesting is the connection of using the breath, using energy work, using our intuition, and using words. So these are the four main principles of what life scripting holds. Now, like I mentioned, because I've done multiple modalities, I always found a loophole in each one. Not because they weren't perfect, but because I would see that people would go into one direction and worship a modality so much that they would neglect other things that could be there that could help them. And when I was open to my own self-healing, I could see that sometimes the breath was not what I needed. I needed more of an energetic balance, although the breath involves energy into it. Sometimes I just needed a bit of intuitive guidance. Sometimes I just needed to shift my mindset with certain words and affirmations. So I always wanted to teach the modalities that I've learned. So honestly, I never thought of creating my own. When I first learned Reiki, I thought I'm going to teach Reiki. When I learned pranic healing, I thought I was going to teach that, rebirthing, et cetera. But life always made it not happen. I remember once when I wanted to teach pranic healing, and I went to one of the senior pranic healers here in Dubai, and he said, Maria, you need another 6 months to be a teacher because you're grieving. I said, okay, and that was when my mom passed away. And then 6 months later, I went back and I was like, can I do it now? I was like, well, hasn't your dad just passed away? I was like, yeah. He said, you need another 6 months for this. I said, oh my God, because my energy was obviously in a grieving state, vibration was low, et cetera. Same with the other modalities. Something always stood in the way. And then one day I was just sitting, I was giving an Akashic record session. And we can talk about Akashic records as well because it's part of life scripting. And while everyone was guided and they were in a semi-trance-like state, I started receiving messages. You do a modality, it's called life scripting. These are the four things. And the messages are just coming in super fast. I was like, wait, I don't have a pen and paper to write this down. So I remember finishing it and I was in awe of what I'd received. I went on Google, tried to type it up if there was a modality called this way. I mean, it's a simple word, right? So you can find this word on the internet, but there was no modality that was called this way. And that's how it started. I sat down, I called my guides, my higher self. I said, just tell me what you want me to write. And I just started typing. Principles came in, ideas came in. Again, having my left brain, my logical teaching curriculum side of knowing how to create a program was easy to develop. And that's what happened. The first training was in 2019 September. So next month will be what, the 4 year anniversary, 3 year anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay. And I like the word life scripting, and I think that's the reason why it intrigued me from the very beginning because of, I think, the word scripting, because I, at some point a couple of years ago, I got heavy into journaling and also attempting to manifest through journaling. So not only journaling about the past, but also journaling about what I'm envisioning for the future. And so the word scripting, when I read it, I was like, okay, it sounded very interesting, especially when you call it life scripting. It's like you have a vision for what you want your life to be, and you're basically scripting it down, but not in the literal sense. It's using the four elements that you just mentioned. So walk me through how it works exactly, how each of these four components complete each other in the life scripting process.
Well, again, that's the, I would say, the unique part of it, that you can combine these four within a session, or you can use them completely separately. Because every person, like whoever is going to come and receive a session, whether it's a group setting or in a one-to-one, what they really need is always going to differ based on what is necessary for them or where they are at a certain point in their life. So let's say if we were to combine all of these four elements or four principles together, first and foremost, it's about making sure in life scripting, we do focus on the cleansing of the space. And that's the most underrated part of life scripting that not many people know. Mm-hmm. Making sure that the space that you're in, which is the room, the area, whether you're outdoors in nature, has a certain energy field, certain vibrational frequency to influence and heal the person. That can involve the tangible elements of fire, water, and earth, which involves crystals. And it can also involve the breath, which is an air element. So if you're using smudging, such as sage or palo santo or frankincense, these will help to create the space. So that's the number one thing. And life scripters learn how to create a certain energy field, a shield around them, for themselves and to the person that they're giving to. Once that is set, the ambience is set in a way, based on the person's needs. So we need to take them to a certain energy field. Either they go to the Akashic Records, which is the field of all the knowledge of the soul, because we want to work on a soul level, not only on a body and a mind level. For me, definitions about the mind, body, and soul are not exactly the same. They're different levels of frequencies, levels of understanding. So when you're giving someone a scripting, a healing session, you need to know what level are you working on. Is it only the mental body? Is it the mind that you want to change, which is what coaching usually does? Is it only on the physical body that you're doing? So you're working only with the chakras, influencing the energy so the physical body feels better? Or you're also working on the soul, and the soul has a karmic element into it, which is most of the time, again, people forget that part. So when they want to manifest, they don't realize that they have certain karmic debts and duties and contracts that they need to work on and erase for them to be able to manifest. So let's say they're connected to the Akashic Records by guidance. In life scripting, everything is verbalized. So there is no hands-on work. You don't touch the client. You don't need to, because we believe that energy follows thought. Energy follows intention. So I don't need my hands to send you energy. I can just say I'm directing the energy to come to you. Mm-hmm. And it does. And once the person's connected to that field, they would either start to do connected breathing. The connected breathing is keeping the inhale and the exhale without any gaps, pauses, or retention, in order for it to circulate their auric field, to create the torus field, to create the spinning impact. And that causes, I call it the washing machine effect. It cleanses the person inside out. And at the same time, they receive energetic activations or deactivations. Now, that's more about the belief systems and the emotion work. So let's say a person wants to manifest the life partner that they want. So we need to help them by deactivating any fears of commitment, for example, deactivating any heartbreak, deactivating any cords and contracts that they have with previous lovers. And then we will activate, now it doesn't have to be in a linear manner. And then we want to activate the right life partner. I like to use the word life partner than a soulmate, because soulmate doesn't necessarily mean a lover. And I'm also not a big fan of the word twin flame, because that also holds a karmic baggage with it. So
yeah, what is that? I heard you say that before.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, in the same session, but there was no chance to really ask you about it at the time. But I am curious. Honestly, I don't use that expression either, but I've seen it being thrown around online and in some books, twin flame. I never really got it, but what is it and why? I mean,
I don't use it.
Like use it. Yeah.
Okay. So then let me just say soulmate, twin flame, and life partner, or divine partner, life divine partner. Soulmate is basically anyone, if you just look at the vocabulary, again, coming from a language background, mate is a friend. So it can be anyone, it can be your parent, it can be a child, it can be a pet. So you have numerous amounts of soulmates.
Right.
That's not gonna be a lover. Now, twin flame, you see, words have power. We were talking about the fourth principle of life scripting. Whatever you say has a meaning and a definition behind it. Whether you've heard it the first time or you've been using it for a long time. The energy of twin flame has come into the understanding that there is one soul that has been lost, and you're looking around trying to find that person because you've made a karmic and a soul contract with them. Now, it might sound great, but what if that other twin flame or soul is not willing consciously or unconsciously to be with you? Then the person ends up being single for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
Plus, there is still a karmic contract involved. So when we shift the energy by saying, I'm attracting my life partner or my divine partner, then we are helping with the power of words, with the intention that I don't want to have necessarily any karmic baggage. Any kind of relationship will have karma. Karma is not a negative word. I don't see it as a negative word, but basically it's the baggage and the debt. So you want to be with someone. And whenever I focus on manifesting with life partners, I tell them focus on the feeling that you want to feel with that person, not the characteristics, not the physical appearance of the person, the feelings, how you want to be felt, how you want to make the other person feel. And from experience, from clients' feedback, they've noticed a shift of what their twin flame is like, because some of them say that I'm with my twin flame, but they're struggling, they're suffering. They're like, oh, we still have lessons to learn. Oh, I have a wounded twin flame and all of that. I believe it's a play of the words, and I'm very fond of words, what words I use and why I say them and how it means and what it means to the other person. So I prefer to neutralize it a bit more and say your divine partner. So your divine masculine or your divine feminine, let that person come to you. Does that make any sense?
It makes sense. And it feels like when you say twin flame, it means there's only one, and a person might get fixated because of that expression on one person.
Yeah.
And they would imagine that this is the person. And if it doesn't happen, it's very restrictive. Calling it a life partner opens it up for many possibilities until that life partner is found. But what is a karmic contract? Because that's another word that you're using. What is that exactly?
So it's basically learning a lesson. It's a lesson that most of the time, because the human consciousness is very much fixated on suffering, learning through pain, learning through difficulties, overcoming challenges. I mean, if you look at the world, many people, the way they speak about life and the way they view life, it comes from that background. So a karmic contract is, I need to go through a certain challenge because I've made a deal to go through that certain challenge. And then once I finish that deal, then I get liberated. Now, how many karmic contracts you have, there's no fixed number on that. And who you have them with, again, it's not fixated with one person. Sometimes it can be very dense with one particular person. That's why it can feel like a push and pull energy, which is, again, what happens a lot with, specifically with lovers and family members, where it's like love-hate relationship, or you want to get rid of them, they can't get rid of you, and the attachment is really strong. So there is a heavy attachment involved. And you have to really go into that state, whether it takes you a month, a year, or 10 years, depending on your speed of your evolution, to really bring that into more equilibrium. I, again, have a different definition of certain words in life scripting, where I prefer to use the word healthy and unhealthy compared to positive and negative. Again, because of the excessive bombardment of those words and what they hold. So creating more of a healthier contract with someone.
You know, you mentioned something that made me think of a question that I sometimes struggle with, or sometimes question myself. And is it possible, which is basically, is it possible to grow spiritually without going through a challenge? So basically, the way I see it, a challenge comes up in life. It brings up in you some emotion or some belief that you have, which you need to heal. So it's like showing you what you've got inside you so that you can heal it. And then you know, you get past it and you move on. But what if someone is already introspective enough to catch whatever limiting beliefs or whatever emotional baggage they have there before the challenge comes up? And then life becomes kind of easier because they're already healing themselves. And is that possible?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Of course. I mean, like I said, it's been a collective definition thinking that life on earth must be through challenges, must be through suffering. And it is relative. In this type of case, I like to use and remember the law of relativity, because a challenge for me might feel a piece of cake for you. You know, so there is a perspective on it as well. And the same challenge that, let's say, I might find in my life right now, or no, I would have found it 10 years ago. And if it happens to me right now, my level of awareness can see it completely differently. So if your perception is changing, the challenge in itself is shifting, because we put meaning into that challenge. I mean, let's look at life's biggest challenges that we can say. Loss of someone that you love, terminal illnesses, bankruptcy, you know, war, abuse. So these are like huge things for the human body and the human mind, right? And you see people like, let's say, these Buddhist monks, these highly evolved ones, where for them, death is just like, oh yeah, I'm just transitioning, moving from one place to the other. And even when they talk about it, you're like, let me die right now. It sounds so cool the way you describe it. And then you look at society and we mourn and we suffer and we can't live our lives with certain people. So it is a matter of perspective, I believe. And there is no, when people ask me, is it possible of any kind of thing? I tell them, show me where it's written that we're not allowed to change this. Where is it written? Where is it written that life must be a challenge? It's just because a couple of people, gurus, masters, maybe people have taken on their words, shifted it, maybe even manipulated it, and ended up putting that there, and the collective ended up believing in it. And we think that's the truth.
Right. Yeah, I had the same conclusion. I was just curious what you thought about that, but makes perfect sense as well. So could you repeat again the four components that you mentioned? Yeah. I just want to see if we've touched on all of them or not yet.
So we touched on breath and energy. We didn't talk much about intuition and words. Now, when it comes to healing or coaching someone, just following by the book, and I see this happen a lot, and this is not necessarily a judgment, it's an observation. If you learn a modality and you just follow what's said in it, let's say a belief system is written there. Someone tells you, I have a stomachache, and they're like, wait, a stomachache means 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Then you're not really honoring your intuitive insight and that person's unique experience. You're just following a script.
Yeah.
Interestingly, using the word script here. So in life scripting, I do intuitive work. I give intuitive readings. I give Akashic Records readings. I do channelings. I don't maybe talk much about that. But when I'm even training people, I make sure that their intuition is getting developed and they are not highly fixated on, if you hear A, you do B. If you see B, you do C. It's not like that. It's about feeling what the person needs. They learn how to ask 4 or 5 questions at the beginning of a session. This is for the ones who are learning. I don't do that. For me, it comes much naturally and easily. Like when a person just starts talking, I can receive the message where this person's at and what they need to heal. So we add an intuitive component. The intuitive component can be about what activations and deactivations they need. Sometimes they're begging to experience something or manifest something, but it's not the right timing. We don't know why. And we say, look, just go with the flow for the time being. So there's more intuitive guidance. And the words are used in 2 separate ways. One is visualizing and scripting in your Akashic Records, in your blueprint. This is a little bit more metaphysics or quantum physics, where you visualize actually writing down in your book of life, because there is such an energy that exists where it's your soul contracts. So, and I tell people what to write, not because I'm directing them to be specific, but being careful of certain phrases. Like, first of all, we don't write people's names because it's none of our business to include their names in our script. Let's say if I want to do a podcast with Muhammad, I won't write down in my life script that I want to do a podcast with Muhammad. What if I want to change that in 5 years or in 10 years? So no people's names are allowed. It's only your name. No timelines are included. Everything is about now. So you're continuously focusing on now, because this is not like a vision board. Oh, in 2023, I want to do this. And it goes a little bit more generalized and a bit more feeling focused, where we just want to bring in those elements of feeling loved, feeling wanted, feeling desired, feeling perfect, feeling happy, feeling healthy, putting those things in and activating them in your blueprint. From a physical perspective, like you mentioned, journaling is one aspect of it. There's so many ways to use words. One of my favorites is intuitive writing, where it can differ a little bit from journaling, where you just sit down, you grab the paper and the pen, and you just write, not because you want to make it sound coherent or cohesive. You just want to empty what's going on. And you might have a lot of doodling even going around. And once you're done, you tear that up and burn it away. You don't read it. You don't keep it. It's not for reflection necessarily. It's an emptying process.
Right.
And of course, we have the visions, we have the affirmations work. So those go under the words category.
You know, I like that you said pen and paper and not typing on your phone, because there's such a huge difference in what comes out when you're actually using your hand and a pen rather than typing. It's amazing how, I don't know why exactly, but I've tried both.
Yeah, it's still ingrained in us. It's an innate way for us to express. I mean, how many years have we started typing really on a phone? I mean, it's been at least for on a phone specifically.
20 something.
It's
very,
very early. I mean, we don't know after 100 years what it would be like. There can be a huge difference. The whole memory, like, you know, writing with an ink pen is already faded out. It sounds like a luxury or an ancient practice.
Right.
So I think it's very innate. And the hand movement and how it's, you probably have noticed certain sentences and words can even change, and the speed can change. Anger comes out. Many emotions come out. This usually happens with my clients when they do the forgiveness process, where they're forgiving certain people in their lives. And they're like, why am I angry? I'm supposed to be forgiving. I'm like, well, that's the whole point. There's a lot of anger and resentment right. in it. And we want to clear that.
Yeah. And when you talk about intuition as well, Maria, here's something I also want to ask. Now, everybody has access to intuition. So it's not like there's people that have intuition and others don't. Maybe others are more developed at accessing their intuition. But for the random person, how can someone differentiate between intuition and mm-hmm. just a thought that is coming from fear or from whatever their lower self telling mm. them something? So, you know, how can one know?
Yeah, that's such an important question. And and I think you kind of answered it as well. First of all, you're right. Everyone has intuition. Everyone has access to it. But there are layers and dimensions of intuition, which means there are layers and dimensions of truth. Everyone can give you some level of an answer. You go to a tarot reader. You go to an Akashic Records reader, a psychic, a medium. Each one is able to give you some kind of message. The key is the level of the person's energetic purity. So it's not about just being intuitive or using a deck of cards. It's about how are they, and what do I mean by purity, is their emotional quality. If a person is continuously obsessed about something, they have OCD, they have anxiety, it doesn't mean they're not intuitive, but it's going to be very difficult for them to know what their mind is saying and what their intuition is saying. So with these type of situations, I make sure that they do a lot of energetic cleansing, going back to the washing machine effect. Mm. So breathing this out of their system, because so many people are also afraid to know. We need to remember that. Everyone loves the word intuition, but when it comes to the action and giving them the power, okay, great, you have the answers within, check it out. They're like, oh, but I'm not sure. Is it right? Is it wrong? So if there is a lot of fear element attached to it, a lot of judgment attached to it, a lot of low emotions. Remember, we talked about Dr. Hawkins' emotional range. So if they're going to have all those lower frequencies, that's not really intuition. It doesn't mm-hmm. mean that they're not picking up what's there, but it's not beneficial really, because it's bringing in more anxiety, fear, and discomfort rather than helping them to mm-hmm. move forward. And right. one more thing I also say is, why do you really need the intuition? And sometimes people get shocked by that question. What do you mean? Why do I need the intuition? Like, what's your purpose? Are you trying to be sneaky and then to find out someone's personal life? Are you trying to manipulate someone? Because when people come to me for readings, and when I usually give my readings, I tell them, don't tell me anything. Let me just start to see what's coming up, right? And after I've done that for the first 15, 20 minutes, I usually answer 80 to 90% of their questions. And then when they start asking me about somebody, I'm like, I'm not going to tell you anything about that person because it's none of your business.
Right.
So usually it's about, what is the benefit of that intuition? What are you using it for? Is it for your own good so you don't make a mistake, or for you to take the right path? Or is it because you just want to be nosy? Mm-hmm. I don't know if I deviated from the topic, but I think this is very crucial when people want to go into the intuitive path and understanding if it's their fear or not.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's important to know this, because if you're being nosy with your intuition, it's going to backfire at Absolutely. The end of the day. The main thing I use my intuition for is for making decisions. So just to help me decide what to do in the moment right now, what do I need to do next? Especially when there's a lot of data, and mm-hmm. because I'm both right brain and left brain at the same time. So I have the left brain doing all the analysis. And when there's a data overload, I put it all to the side and I check in with my intuition and I just decide right there and then. And sometimes it's not what the data says I should be doing, but it feels right. And it's, most of the time, if it really is intuition, it's the right thing to do.
And I want to add, sorry to interrupt, I want to add, being more assertive with the intuition is also necessary, like commanding it, like, show me the truth, show me the right path. Like, not like, can you please tell me what I need to do? It doesn't have to be that way. It has to be more assertive, because you want the energy to like cut forward and cut straight through the direction that you want to go. So again, if you have a decision, when you want to make a decision, you just say, just show it to me right now. Just delete everything else that's not supposed to be there. Like, clear the path and just show me which direction, A or B. And trust me, the more you do this, it doesn't take you more than a minute to get that answer.
Yeah. I learned about this concept very recently, actually, and I don't remember through who, but like very recently, about the commanding aspect of, of intuition and just energy work in general and how it works. You know, I'm going to say something that I'm saying for the first time. I never shared this, so probably for some listeners, it might sound a bit strange, but how I look at intuition is, and then you can tell me if this makes any sense or not. All thoughts, intuition and otherwise, they don't come from our physical brain. I feel like the brain is like a radio that is tuned in a field that has all sorts of ideas, thoughts, everything. Some of them are true, some aren't. They are different, and they exist on different frequencies. In truth has a higher frequency, and intuition is on that level. And you have to be on a higher, I mean, you have to be in a, let's say, in a calm, that's why when you're in a calm state of mind, what they call alpha brain waves, you can tune in higher to higher frequencies, and that's why your brain can catch the intuition from, because you need to be on a higher frequency to catch it. So if you're angry, you might not get an intuition there, because you're tuned in the lower frequency thoughts of the field that are there. So until you're calm and you're in a more relaxed, peace, loving state, it becomes easier to access that higher realm.
Absolutely.
That's just something I thought of
100%
once, and I don't know. Is it, does it make sense?
100%. And I would like add to it with what you exactly said, that, you know, that when you're talking about the anger and the calm and peace, that's why it's very challenging at the early stages for us to be intuitive for ourselves, because we're so subjectively involved in something, right? Let's say I have an opportunity to work for someone and I really need that work, or I really need that money. So it's going to be quite challenging, because my ego, and again, ego for me is not a negative thing, it's a characteristic, it's a personality, wants a certain outcome. So it's hoping that it gets that outcome, rather than being objective and saying, okay, show me what is the best. Just show me, what do I need to do? Is this really a good thing or not? Which is why people go to readers, right? Because, not because they're not intuitive enough. I mean, they might not know this, but they usually think that they don't have the ability, so someone else is going to tell them. And that's why for me, when I say, don't give me any information about you, is because I do not want to create any kind of connection, like any kind of, like if someone comes to me, oh, I just broke up, it's natural. My human mind will try to interfere. Oh, this person's broken up, so they're probably sad, they're probably afraid. I need to make sure always that this left brain is not involved in the process. So I'm like, okay, you're here, you want a reading, let me just start and see what's coming up. So being objective, I would say, and choosing to just get the truth would really help someone's intuition to be accurate, which is why you have different channelers, you have different psychics, and you would say, wow, this person's message was so right, and this person's message wasn't so right, but they were all tuning in. It's the transparency of it, and how objective they are, and how they're not letting the ego take over to give them the answer because they want such an answer out of it. Make sense?
It makes sense. Yeah, makes a lot of sense. And it's not an easy thing to understand, to digest. So if somebody's listening and they're like, what are these guys talking about? It's completely fine. Yeah, you know, so, but you know, I'm sure other people are gonna it's gonna resonate with others as well. And that's why sometimes on this podcast I like to go all the way to the deep end, and it's you know, it's very satisfying. So when that happens, and I want to also take the chance to talk about the Akashic records, because that's also something that we mentioned. Did we already say what they are or not yet? I don't think
it's a field of, I define it as it's a field of energy. And it's the way that you described about the brain receiving information. And that's what we do with the Akashic. So everyone has the ability to connect. Some of them are consciously connecting to it. Some of them are not. So your gifts, your talents, your abilities, your likes and dislikes all come from your Akashic records. Now, obviously, it's not really a physical library that exists somewhere, although if you Google it, you always see library pictures. But interestingly, I've had people who don't know what Akashic records is, and they come in, they go into that state, and they're like, I saw a library. So obviously, there is some level of truth, or that's how the mind keeps perceiving it. I don't know 100% the answer for it. Maybe it's a collective message that we picked up. So if you are working with your Akashic records, and I need to clarify this, the word Akashic records is not a modality. So if someone says, I do Akashic records reading or Akashic records, it's not a modality. It's like telling someone, I do breath work or I do energy work. Breath work has many modalities. Energy work has so many. Akashic records is the same. So it's basically tuning into that field and letting the person tune into that field. In my case, for me, it was helping them to heal in that frequency, in that vibration. So we want to work on it from a soul level, like we mentioned earlier. We don't want it to only work on a physical and a mind level. And we also want to script and receive messages from there. So usually, again, to differentiate and clarify, many people who work with Akashic records, they use hypnosis because they take the person into a certain brainwave state for them to access that field. And again, one underrated concept is they always think it's only about past lives. Just because it's your infinite field, it doesn't mean you're only accessing past lives. That's just a partial aspect of it, because you have all possibilities, past, present, future, parallel lives existing as a soul. And you go there and explore. It's an exploration. The way I do it, I do not do hypnosis. That's, again, the interesting thing about life scripting, where in a matter of 3 minutes, 4 minutes, you are tapped into that field.
Right.
So when people tell me, what did you do? You didn't do a hypnosis process, because I'm not a hypnotherapist. It's just an energetic, you know, click that happens. You're here and then you're just right there. Yeah. And over and over again, I've had people confirm to me that they're there because of the feeling they get, the visions they get, the answers they get, and the healing that happens to them.
Right. Yeah. I was one of those people. And I remember very clearly the experience. It was not hypnosis. It was 3-4 minutes of breathing and visualization. And I think I got the image of the library as well. And I might have said it too. I don't remember. But it was definitely it was a profound experience. And I remember I came out of that session, which I think was an hour long, or 45 minutes or an hour, where there was maybe three exercises in there. One of them was accessing the Akashic records. And there was another one that is the Merkaba, which is probably, we don't have time to get into that one today, maybe in another time. But I'll tell you, Maria, that for the next 24 hours, at least, maybe 48 hours after that day, I was feeling much lighter. I mean, at work, just walking around from the center back home, and then the next day, I felt much lighter, and I felt something was lifted off. I had previously been struggling with some issues that I've been dealing with for a few years, actually. And I was doing different things to address them all kind of at the same time. And this session was one of those things. It definitely made a shift. I can confirm for sure. So it is something that is valuable. I still don't know the intricacies of why exactly it works. I think that requires a deeper
Honestly, I
dive.
don't know. Honestly, I don't know too. So I'm going to be very honest about that. There is something magical that's taking place in it. I know my intentions are always very direct when I give the session. Because for me, the number one thing, I mean, I have this motto. For me, it's truth, love, and light. So if it's truthful, we do it. There has to be a loving element to it, and light needs to be there. We always work with light. It doesn't mean that we're afraid of darkness, but we just don't. We have so much darkness in the world anyway, which we were talking about the suffering. So working through light to make someone feel lighter, like what you've experienced. So if those intentions, when I guide the people, are there, naturally their true essence and what they need to clear, what they're ready to get out of, what they need to shift. Because I remember it was one of the sessions that we did, one of the exercises that we were pulling out of us and transmuting lower emotions or lower thoughts into the violet flame. Now, that's again an energetic color that we use. It's profound, helping to transmute that. And it just, which is where I can say it's the soul shifting. So if the soul feels also lighter, because for me, soul and higher self are different things. Again, I need to clarify that. For me, I would say the higher self is the purest form. It has no karma, it has no baggage. And then, if we want to visualize it from a linear perspective, from a vertical perspective, then there's the higher self, which is connected to the creator's energy, the God's energy. And then it flows down to a soul or many souls from one higher self. And that soul goes into different physical bodies and has different experiences. So when the physical body dies, the soul has memories that it's trying to work on. So, which is why you might have heard phrases like, oh, soul fragments, or the soul is traumatized, or the soul is feeling empty. It's not because they are in the perfect, purest form. They're moving, it's that energetic part. And according to, let's say, masters and teachers, they say once you finish all of that and you choose to finish all that karmic stuff from the physical, and you go from the soul, and then you just unite with the higher self. So that's my definition. That's the vision that I've seen. And when you're working with your Akashic records, you're clearing a lot of soul trauma, soul baggage.
I felt that. And just speaking of the Akashic records, because there's often times where different people call the same things different names. So I'm sure you know the book The Field by Lynn, what's her name? Lynn McDaggart or something. I don't know if I'm pronouncing the
Yes,
name
but I haven't
correctly.
read it. Yes.
She's the one that wrote about the intention experiment as well. So I wonder, is it the same thing, the field she's describing, is it the same thing as the Akashic records? Because she's describing an energetic field of information that connects all things.
No,
Maybe it's the
she's,
same, maybe not. I don't know.
it is. And Akashic Records was just recently coined, like by Rudolf Steiner. Rudolf Steiner was an Austrian educator, and he was a spiritual teacher, and he was the one who coined the word Akashic Records. But before him, people were already using it. Like Helena Blavatsky was continuously using that, but she was just saying conscious field, conscious field. And the reason why Akashic Records was used because it comes from the Sanskrit term Akash, so etheric field. So any etheric field, But you see, again, words have power, right? So if we put the intention, we're accessing the Akashic Records. So we're accessing that field, then we are going to connect to the information that is there.
Yeah. Okay. It's very fascinating. And I think we can talk about this for like a few more hours.
True.
But maybe we can expand it in the next ones. But thanks a lot, Maria, for the explanation. It's very informative, and there's so much to unpack, I think, in this episode alone. I know we have only 1 hour, so before you go, there's a question that we ask all the guests, which is just about recommending a book or an author that you've read, whether recently or a long time ago, doesn't matter, that has had an impact on your life and you would like to recommend it to the listeners and the viewers.
Well, I would definitely say by Leonard Orr, who was the founder of Rebirthing Breathwork, and the book is called Rebirthing in the New Age. So it was a book written in the early 1970s. Mm. And he was the one who actually brought the connected conscious breathing phenomena in the Western world. And through him, all the breathwork that you know from 1970 onwards, whether it's holotropic, shamanic, Wim Hof, they were all continuations and learnings from what he's done. So it's fascinating to read that and to understand different traumas that he talks about and how much they impact us, spiritual teachings, the most intriguing, controversial topic of physical immortality that he touches on. Mm. So it's a, and when you read it, you can feel energies shifting in your body. So it's worth reading. I don't know if there are, I don't believe that there is a new publication of it. So probably on Amazon, there might be the used versions of it, but definitely worth reading that book.
I'll check if there's an audio version as well. Maybe we'll see, but thank you very much for that recommendation. He seems to be kind of the forefather of all the breathwork movements that are happening today. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, Maria, thank you very much. It's really been a pleasure having you on. Thank you for your time, for the information, for explaining everything. For those that want to reach you, we're going to share your page, your contacts when we publish the episode on Instagram, YouTube, and other streaming platforms. And well, to all the audience, thank you very much for tuning in, and see you next time. Take care.